I want to kind of turn to the one that you were more involved with, which dealt with a bunch of issues. And we began talking about ovarian cancer, but we were actually talking about, you know, sort of non-PARP issues. And you began the meeting by talking about reviewing some of the data related to treatment of advanced ovarian cancer. Particularly, you went through some of the stuff you were referring to earlier related to bevacizumab. Could you just go back and talk a little bit about some of the key data sets that came out in the last few years related to bevacizumab, and sort of, you know, you were talking about it before, the way that has led you to integrate the drug into your own practice?
Right. So ovarian cancer is probably the most active drug for bevacizumab. The editorial by Stan Kay in the Journal of Clinical Oncology, when we presented our single agent phase two data, Bob Berger, the editorial was called Bevacizumab, Its Finest Hour. So bevacizumab is generally not considered to be active as a single agent in the other tumors that it's labeled in, such as colorectal cancer and lung, but it is active as a single agent. And so it kind of speaks to the biology that ovarian cancer is very angiogenesis driven, and really ascites is angiogenesis out of control. So around the world, it's labeled as a frontline drug. It's not labeled as a frontline drug, again, with chemotherapy and maintenance in the United States. But in the United States, it's labeled as mostly a second-line drug in platinum-resistant recurrent ovarian cancer with three chemotherapy options, topotecan, paclitaxel, and pegylated liposomal doxorubicin. And it's labeled with two other chemotherapy options in platinum-sensitive relapse, carboplatin paclitaxel and carboplatin gemcitabine. And in the sensitive setting, because the response rates are almost as high as frontline, there's a maintenance component as well. So five chemotherapy options, it's a second-line drug, and although the frontline indication is not here, some people still use it, but rarely.
What about you? I hear people talking about the high-risk situation.
In patients frontline that have large volumes of residual disease or stage four, both the two pivotal trials, GOG-218 and ICON-7, there was an 8-month survival advantage. It wasn't the primary endpoint, but it's provocative, and I love that idea, quite frankly. But I have trouble getting it reimbursed because it's off-label.
And, you know, globally, do you sort of view it as, you know, risk reduction thing in general, that whatever stage you're going to use it, there's going to be some added benefit, and, you know, we just don't have the research to prove it up front?
Well, I think there's no question that there is added benefit. The question is the financial toxicity. So the way drugs are reimbursed in this country is obviously different than other countries. But in let's say, France and Germany, to highly developed countries, Bev is almost always used frontline based on their reimbursement structure, but that's not the way it is here. So it's definitely rational. There is a benefit, and the benefit's probably exaggerated based on the bulk of the disease.